Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Larry Jacobs, and welcome back to today's edition of Education Talk Radio. We're happy to have you here, as we always are. This is Education Talk radio for the profession, pre-K through 16. And again, I'm Larry Jacobs, and I thank you for listening. We've got a special guest today. He's coming back. We just loved it when he was on the first time, Dr. Scott Elliott. He'll be on in just a few minutes of SEG Measurement, which is located over in New Hope, beautiful New Hope, Pennsylvania, where my wife happened to grow up. But besides that, I wanted you to know that we had a great show yesterday with Elizabeth Evans, who's the founding CEO of something called the Viva Project, which is at vivateachers.org, which is trying to get teachers involved in the public debate about education reform. And if you missed that show or missed any of our shows, you can always go over to Education Talk Radio. This is the website, educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. We call that our radio blog, www.educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. Everything's located over there, including our guest today, Scott's first show, which was a few weeks ago. Also, very soon, all of our shows are going to be located and archived as well on www.edweb.net. EdWeb is, in my opinion, the premier online social community for educational leaders today, be they teachers, administrators, librarians, etc. That's www.edweb.net. And, of course, if you're listening live right now, you know this address, but I'll give it to folks who may be listening to an archive and want to listen live in the future. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/edutalk, EDUTALK. Okay, enough websites. There'll be a short quiz later, teachers. Scott Elliott, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hello, Larry.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good, good.
That's good. How's the weather down there in beautiful New Hope, PA today? Are you actually in New Hope, or are you somewhere else today?
Yes, I'm actually in New Hope, in the office for a rare moment, and I wouldn't say it's wonderful weather, but it's good enough.
Yeah, we're a little gray up here in the Boston area, too, but I will do a little tourist thing just before we begin our conversation today. If you've never been to Buckhead County, folks, New Hope, Pennsylvania, and around there, it is one of the more beautiful spots on the face of the earth, right near where Washington, President Washington, back in the old days, General Washington, crossed the Delaware to attack the British in the old days of the Revolution. Right, Scott?
That's correct, but actually it was the Germans, but we'll talk about that later.
The Hessians. Okay, we'll get into that today.
Correct.
Scott, who is the president of SEG, Scott, who is the president of SEG Measurement, which is an educational assessment and research firm, again, located in New Hope, Pennsylvania. Scott and I are going to be talking about educational product and service effectiveness research. And Scott, I believe your PhD or EdD is in assessment and research. Am I correct?
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
Okay, now I believe it's from UMass.
Oh, correct.
Not that
correct.
Long,
a long time ago.
Not that long.
No.
Okay. Well, before I'm going to ask you the first question today, and it's going to be a loaded question. I know you're going to have a great answer for this. What is educational product effectiveness research? That's our topic. Tell me and the audience what it is.
That's a great place to start, Larry. Is product effectiveness research is essentially research that a company or a school or the government might conduct to figure out if a particular product or a particular program in the schools is working. So if I wanted to find out if I had a magic new product, we'll call it magic new product, and I wanted to find out if that actually produced greater learning or greater motivation or greater interest in students, I would want to conduct product effectiveness research to make sure that indeed what I was offering was effective, that it actually worked. So I would be looking to get proof that something worked.
And let me ask you, Scott, because as you and I know, and as I've just introduced, you're president of SEG Measurement. Okay, so your clients are the people who will need this information. who usually calls you? Is it the school district? Is it a department head? Is it the administration? Is it the company that produced the product? Who's the call usually come from?
We do work, actually, it can come from several places. Most commonly, we will hear from an educational publisher or an educational technology provider that has a particular product or service that they want to conduct research to see whether it's effective, whether it works, and the extent to which it's effective. And, you know, there's a variety of means we can go about that, but usually our calls are coming from educational publishers or technology providers. It can also come from a district, and on occasion, a district will say, we're considering purchasing a product or adopting a particular product or service, and we really could use SEG's help in figuring out whether it actually works before we commit our resources to doing that.
That's cool. So the school districts need to know that about SEG measurement. So I'm going to give the website right now, and as well as the publishers, and it's SEG, is it underscore, or SEGmeasurement.com?
Nope, one word, SEGmeasurement.com.
Right, the way it was typed out here, it looked like it could have an underscore, so I wanted to be sure. SEGmeasurement.com, you should go there and check this out. And let me ask you, you know, like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval, is there an SEG seal of approval that goes on some of these products?
I think rather than thinking of it as an SEG seal of approval, I think the value really comes in using a third-party research company. It's hard to evaluate yourself. We all think we're pretty wonderful. So there's an advantage to engaging a third-party firm like SEG so that you have a more objective outside third-party view of whether that product is effective. So I think the way to think of it is a third-party view as opposed to necessarily a seal of effectiveness.
Okay, thank you very much. And that puts that into perspective. Now, I know that there is a growth in interest these days in effectiveness research within the educational community. And I'm just going to ask you the simple question, why do you think that is? Why do you think it's become more important recently?
And that's a good question, Larry. We've seen a lot of growth, and I think the educational community has seen a lot of growth in interest in effectiveness or efficacy research. And I think there's really two reasons for that. One is that consumers are just a bunch smarter than they were before. Schools, you know, have a lot of products and a lot of services to choose from. There's certainly no limit on what a school could adopt to help with its reading, math, science, social studies, or other type program. And they really need to sort through that, and they're more and more asking the question of what's effective.
Okay. And I want to say this question right. Obviously, the publishers and that sell to school districts, and by the way, there are more and more of those than ever before, I would guess. Okay, they are, I assume, using you, companies like yours, like SEG, almost every step of the way. I can't imagine that they would create a product and not have it researched all the way through before they put it on the market. Do you work with the companies as they're going step by step through a new product, be it a new curriculum, a new technology, whatever the case may be?
Yes, Larry. We get engaged at various points. It depends, you know, on the particular publisher or provider. But they see tremendous value in having this research because their customers are asking for it. They're saying, where's the proof? You know, you're telling me this is a great product, but where's the proof? So, you know, they have a customer base that's saying, you know, we need to see the proof. So they're seeing the value in their, you know, marketing and sales. It also, getting involved early on, which is what we ideally like to do with them, is it can help inform the development before the product is complete. You know, what a great idea, get some feedback from the schools, you know, and be able to see what might be changed, what might be modified, what's working, what's not working. And I think that's a big motivator for getting involved. There's also, you know, really a more abstract reason for companies getting involved. And they want to be good members of the educational community. And it certainly increases customer perceptions when they see a company that's involved and committed to research. You know, so it really is multidimensional.
And, you know, I want to say something, since I'll segue for 1 second into this. in this industry, and I said this before on the air, I've never seen a more sincere group of, I'll call them manufacturers, but they're providers in some way, be it of education or technology. But nobody, in my opinion, and maybe you've seen different, but nobody's intentionally putting out junk. There's no lower quality to anybody. Everybody's striving for the same and the highest quality and doing it pretty much with a smile on their face. And I think they want all the, I'll call them again, manufacturers of curriculum, et cetera, want to do the right thing. And hiring companies like yours, Scott, with SCG Measurement, along the way really, really helps them. And I think, as I was saying before, it does sort of give a SCG seal of approval, or at least a well-researched seal of approval to everything they're doing. I think it does make for good neighbors within the education community. And I think you'd agree, wouldn't you?
Yes, and Larry, I mean, we've chatted about this in the past. I think we're really fortunate, to be in an industry where, people work collegially, and I think you don't go into this industry unless you have some level of commitment to improving student learning or some sort of aspect of education. And it really makes a difference. Is that I often joke with folks is, please don't tell my clients, but I do this even if I didn't get paid.
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. So the educational publishers, the technology providers, okay, are they just this is a tough question, but I hope I'm phrasing it right. Are they just hiring companies like yours, Scott, and again, it's SCG Measurement and New Hope, are they just hiring companies like yours to improve their bottom line? You see, like I was saying a minute ago, that they really want to just simply produce the best product, correct?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons. I mean, one is they want to produce the best product, but, I think most make no bones about the fact that, it's highly competitive out there, and it really does improve their bottom line. So I think the motivations are both, to improve their products and to improve their bottom line. Is somebody in the industry once said, we have one of the few industries where we have to both do well and do good.
That's nice. I like the way you said that. Do well and do good. And that's the way I would describe this industry without question. Scott, let me ask you a more pointed question. When you go out and do research, or when a company hires you to do research, and let's just pretend it's a new social studies curriculum, do they research it in all types of schools, a rural district, an urban district, a different grade level, whatever the case may be? How do you guys handle that kind of thing?
Well, it really depends on the scope of the study. We do studies as small as examining one school as a case study, all the way to, a multinational study in which we might engage a half a dozen states and over 100 teachers. So it really depends on the scope of the study the publisher needs and wants to do. Generally, if we can do one of large scope, if the resources are there, we try to get schools that are both rural, those that are suburban, those that are urban,
mm-hmm.
Try to get a diversity of the students involved and a diversity of teaching involved. But it really depends on the scope of the study. It always surprises me. No two studies that we do are alike. They really, fit the specific needs of the situation.
I have an odd question, but I'd like to ask it. As you are going about your research, is any one group in the education, in the educational community, the education side of it, any more difficult to work with than the other? And I'll say it this way: is elementary school easier than high school to work with as you're researching? Are math teachers easier to work with than social studies teachers? Is there any kind of criteria that affects the research at all? Have you ever seen that there is a problem with one group over the other, or is everybody in the classroom environment, the school environment, pretty cooperative across the board?
Well, it's we anybody who's had young kids,
but it's just crossing my mind,
knows that it's a challenge, right? So the young kids, once you get below about grade three, you run into some challenges because they can't take tests as easily to get pre and post test information, and they're a little difficult to put in controlled research. The magic word with research is control, and that's somewhat antithetical to what we think of young students. But Larry, I must tell you, I had a great experience last week. I was out in the field doing some observation at some sites that, for one of our clients that are conducting a study, and I had a chance to interact with fourth graders. And if you haven't had a chance to sit down and talk with a set of excited fourth graders, then you really are missing something. It was so much fun.
And you're the guest in the classroom. You're the guest. It's fun for them to have somebody come visit. Right.
Yep.
It reminds me of the old, I'm showing my age here, but you remember the Art Linkletter show when he used to sit down with kids and he just asked them silly questions and let them ramble? And that's kind of, I bet, what you got. Am I correct? Were they fun?
Precisely. It's like, I recall Cosby took over for him for a while there, too. And they don't really hold back. They're really authentic, and it's really a lot of fun to talk with them.
That's right. And actually, that brings up an interesting point. You're actually getting from the kids, if I may, from the students, a first person, although I'm sure it's cute and adorable, but you know how to do it, a first person report on how the curriculum's working. Am I correct?
Absolutely. You know, as shocking as it may sound, is I think a lot of people, unfortunately, in the past, hopefully, companies will sit down and develop a product based on the research, do their best, and go through that process without ever talking to a fourth grader. You know, you really do need to have a good direct perspective on the kids if you're developing products for those kids. It makes a big difference.
And actually, you're exactly right. I have to tell you, I was reading an article yesterday about that new movie, which unfortunately I have not seen. It's not playing anywhere around here right now. It's Waiting for Superman, the movie about educational reform. And the point in the article was that, I don't know if you saw the same article, it was on a newsletter I get, but the point of the article was that in the entire documentary, they never sat down with a classroom teacher. They sat down with, they sat down with kids, I don't believe, and they didn't sit down with a classroom teacher. It was all kind of people from the outside or supervisor or administrative people, okay, and they never got the scoop from the inside out, so to speak. And what the research that you're doing, okay, is to me much more credible when you effectively leave out the people who are basically using it and learning from it. I mean, did you see that movie yet?
No, I haven't had a chance, but I've heard, it certainly engendered a lot of feelings on both sides of the equation. But, you know, when I go out there, the vast majority of teachers we work with and administrators are really committed to making a difference. There's certainly some bad apples. There's some bad apples in every profession, but I continue to be impressed with what's going on out there. Sometime, maybe we'll talk on another show sometime, but sometimes I think a lot of the actions we take do more to stop the kids from learning than helping them learn. They're almost hard to keep from learning if you set the right conditions up.
What a great statement that is. Okay, they're hard to keep from learning. You must see that all the time. It's just amazing. I hope you get that feedback back to your manufacturers. Keep the kids excited. Keep them happy. Give the teachers what they can use. It works great. Okay, what about types of studies? You know, you just talked about this one-on-one thing where you would go in and literally talk to the fourth graders or whatever kids it is or students it is that you're researching. Is that the only kind of research that you do?
We really do a wide variety of research, and I think there's a variety of kinds of research that I can talk a little bit about that really play into effectiveness and determining effectiveness.
I would love to hear that because I am far from being an expert on educational research. So tell me the types, please.
Sure. There's everything from sort of a one-on-one type, almost like a clinical study where you observe kids. You know, you can almost envision the one-way glass type study where you're observing kids or a single kid, all the way up through what would be called an experimental study, which is often referred to as the gold standard, where it's very much like a medical model. If you know, we've all read a little bit about medical research in the newspaper. We do something very similar in education, where we have a treatment group, a group that's actually using the product or service. We have a group that's a control group that's not using that product or service. And we measure them at the beginning of the study with a pretest, and we measure them at the end of the study with a post-test. And we can see how somebody who actually uses the product or service compares with those over that same period of time using the same testing, how they do without that product or service. And that's sort of the gold standard where you really know because you're comparing it to a control group. If we only use, which does have value, a case study where we're only, say, looking at people, users of the product, we always have the question in the back of our mind is, what would have happened? Would they have learned this much if they didn't use the product? Maybe it's part of natural growth of a kid. So to leave that question, make sure that question's not unanswered, is we use control group and treatment group. But on the other hand, it's really nice if you can supplement that experimental study with observations, interviews, case studies, because you get a much richer picture, as we just talked about, when you're actually talking to the teachers and talking to the kids. So, a lot of it's dependent on resources, like so many things. We really like to do the ideal, but, you know, if we have to back off from there, certainly everybody's constrained by resources in this day and age.
Of course. How often do and I'll say it this way, because I assume you're talking about those who have hired you who are educational publishers. Okay, how often do they continually, I want to ask this question right, do they continually do the research over the course of time to measure the effectiveness of their program over the course of time? And it's odd because I assume that as time goes by, the effectiveness, I may be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, does the effectiveness go down or do other programs come in that are slightly better? How do they measure that over time?
Well, you're actually asking research questions. I don't know whether they go up or they go down. That's why you go in and do research. And I think it would really vary in the situation. Most publishers will do a study that's lasting about a year. It can certainly be done in less time, and it can certainly be done over a number of years. You know, the issue becomes when you're going across a number of years, it's ideal, as you say, if we could look across a number of years, but it can be very challenging to track those students. Schools are not known for their ability to track students from one year to another. So, figuring out
You mean all that stuff about all those notes going into my permanent record was not correct? Is that what you're saying, Scott?
Right. I defy somebody to find your permanent record.
Exactly. Okay, so it's hard for the school to track the kid over the course of the long period of time. Do the educational publishers out there, the technology providers, they understand this. They're constantly going after more and more research to either add on to what they already have or change it as society changes. Am I correct?
Correct. I mean, once publishers realize the value of this and they sort of bite the bullet and do one study, they sort of catch the bug. They realize that there's tremendous value both in the development of their product as well as in their marketing and sales, continuing a commitment to research. So, you tend to see once publishers begin this process, they tend to show commitment to do, periodic research over time.
They are committed. Now, I have to ask you, Scott, just anecdotally, and by the way, Scott Elliott is our guest today. He's president of SEG Measurement, which is an educational assessment and research firm in New Hope, Pennsylvania. I always like to say that every so often during the show. But, Scott, what was the oddest thing that ever happened in your career doing research for people when you did some research and the results came back and you said, oh, my Lord?
Well, actually, good or bad?
Do you have a good one for us, an anecdotal story?
Yeah, I have a great one. We're doing one right now, and we just looked at the preliminary results, and it's a new, in respect to the client, I'll keep the details confidential, but it's technology device that both computers and books interact together, and it's actually a short study, so I was frankly a bit concerned, would there be enough time to see the kind of results we wanted to see. And we've been shocked. The fact is that we think we have a really, that our client does has a really hot product on their hand that produces substantial growth over time for kids. And, it's all about providing the technology and quality materials and letting the kids go, not holding them back. And it's been tremendous.
That's the second time you said that. If you stand in their way, they're not going to learn. If you let them go, they will learn. This is interesting stuff coming from you, Scott,
right.
I tell you. So you did a short study for these people with this new technology product. okay? A study that you thought wasn't going to show solid results, and boom, you looked at it and you said, wow, these results are incredible. You're on your way. Am I correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, it's always easy to look at this, you know, the super success stories. Granted, they're a little few and far between, you know, compared to what we might ideally like. But, you know, I think the bigger question, especially for a publisher, is what happens if my results aren't that good? And I think, frankly, one of the things SEG brings to the table is a sensitivity to that. You know, we always completely and honestly represent the results in our report. But, you know, there's ways of presenting them more positively and less positively. We are certainly sensitive to the fact that a publisher, you know, is going to be extremely sensitive to what appears in a report. And I think that that separates us from some of the more academic solutions, because there are some great researchers out there, but frankly, they have a little less understanding and sensitivity to the environment in which educational publishers and educational technology providers live.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. How do you stay objective? You know, knowing that you've been hired, and I know you are objective when you do this, because that's the goal of this, to provide the objective research. And it harkens back to what you just said a moment ago, Scott. How do you stay the goal is to stay objective. How do you stay objective in this? How do you do that?
It's honestly, it's difficult. It can be difficult, Larry, but you know, at the heart of what we do is our credibility. You know, sure, we're selling research services. Sure, we're selling reporting and dissemination services. But at the heart of what we're doing, we're selling objective, third-party, honest results. So we're always on a daily basis cognizant of the fact that, you know, what's most important is for our clients and for us is to protect
exactly
our credibility and integrity.
And protect their the client's credibility and integrity. I mean,
correct.
It all boils down to objective, solid research from an objective, solid company, okay, that provides the educational provider, be it in technology or curriculum or whatever, with the exact information they need. In the end, it only makes things better, doesn't it, Scott?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the companies really benefit from doing this, and, you know, we keep harkening back to the same thing, is it's really a pleasure to be in an industry where, you know, you see your services making a difference. Is if, you know, when we produce that research, and, you know, it's extremely rewarding to see the publishers or technology providers then disseminate it, because frankly, the schools are making better decisions. They have a right to select and choose, you know, products and services that work. So it's really
mm-hmm.
rewarding to be in an industry where you can really support getting effective solutions out to kids and teachers.
I think it's good. Tell us just a little bit about SEG for a second. First of all, what's SEG of SEG measurement? I know I can figure out the SE of Scott Elliott, but what's the G?
Well, at one point, it was very early on, the vision was that it would be a Scott Elliott group, but literally within the month of us opening, that was changed to Strategic Education Group, and has since over the years really become SEG. Much the way other companies simply, you know, retain the initials from an initial business, SEG really has no meaning than other than a name to find and make sure you're finding the right company.
Well, Strategic Education Group, I do like that, but it is SEG Measurement, SEGmeasurement.com. Okay, so thank you, Scott. I was curious about that one. You know, we were talking before about, you know, the studies that you conduct, and you had mentioned particularly experimental studies. You do all kinds of studies. How long does it take to do a typical study, and run down the types you have and how long it takes to do them and what it entails?
Sure. I'd say typically, the typical study, as I mentioned a bit earlier, Larry, is about a year. It's a really nice unit because it gives you enough time to, you know, get an in-depth study of effectiveness, and it fits neatly because the school year is sort of a unit that we all work with. Everybody knows that things start up in August or September and that things wrap up in June. And so if we use
right.
that time frame, we get a really good picture of what occurs over sort of a typical learning period. That said, we have also done studies that will go across 2 or 3 years where we'll continue to try to track the kids and see, you know, is there continued learning or even additional growth based on whatever that initial treatment or product and service usage was. We also, this one that I was mentioning earlier is a particular success story we're just completing, was 3 months. I get a little nervous when we have shorter time frames, but if it's the right product and the research is structured in a way that you can observe short-term results, 3 months could be a really nice complement and piece of research in the sort of the bag of tricks, so to speak, that a publisher has to offer.
Is there a standard? I'm sure there are, but again, I'm not so familiar in this area. Is there a standard way to do these researches, or does each one conform to that product specifically, and you throw out whatever was there from a different company or whatever and just plump in all new stuff? What's the carryover between the two?
We have a sort of a preferred model, but no two are really alike. The situation and the particular needs, of who we're working with will really dictate what we do. But most typically, we lean towards trying to do either experimental studies, as we talked about earlier, or a fancy word, quasi-experimental studies, which are very similar. You just can't randomly assign kids to groups. But in both cases, you use a control group that's not using the product and a treatment group that is using the product, and you test them before and after the research. So we tend to at least try to include something like that in a model if we're doing effective research because, again, that issue is you don't want to always have that lingering question of did the growth we see, what would have happened if they didn't use the product? We can answer that.
Right.
By having a control group,
right.
We can say this is how much growth you would have seen if the product wasn't used, and here's how much growth occurred if the product is used.
It's the old line, like what you're trying to do and what you can do is prove a negative. You can prove that what would happen if we didn't use it. That's what it
right.
allows you to do. Right. It's interesting.
Right. Otherwise, you would be speculating.
Exactly. You can't prove a negative, but in actuality, you can if you have the control group. One's positive,
correct.
One's negative. You can see where things are going. At what stage? Because, you have to have, I'm sure, teacher cooperation. At what stage and how do they select which teachers, et cetera, which classrooms that they're going to be using?
Well, there's two basic models if we're doing sort of a control treatment design. Is one, which is, again, the gold standard, where you randomly assign the students. You might get a roster of students. You randomly assign this student will use the treatment, the product.
Mm-hmm.
This one won't. More often than not, that's not feasible because we've got kids in something called classes. They're already in
right.
classes. So what we
right.
do is usually pick one group of classes that are going to use it and one group of classes that aren't and try to make sure you get a pretty good balance so that one class doesn't start off, being high achievers and one low achievers. You try to match them on their achievement. You try to match them on, their ethnic and gender background. So you try to get matched groups as much as possible. But there's also statistical ways that you can also help deal with that, and that's why folks come to us for the heavy lifting.
But, it is heavy lifting because there's one party, we're talking about the publisher, the creator of the curriculum. We're talking about the students who are benefiting from the curriculum in one way or the other. But in the middle of all this is the teachers, okay? And do you find that teachers are cooperative? And I can't imagine they aren't, but what's the process of getting the teacher involved? Does the teacher have to go to a special class? Do they have to meet with someone from your company, SEG? How does it work?
Well, usually what happens, and every time I say usually, there's exceptions to the rule, but typically...
Right. By the way, if I sound naive, I am naive about the way this works. So please, go ahead.
Well, I think most people are. I mean, I think that's really, the same way as I don't do my plumbing because I'm pretty naive with regards to plumbing, is folks come to us because they're, relatively naive with regard to research and need the help.
Exactly.
There's nothing really to apologize for there. But teachers usually, particularly to make sure that the treatment is being done, the product is being used as it's designed, it's usually accompanied by some professional development. Usually the company will give them a briefing on how to use the product, what the requirements are, and depending on the company, there may be continuing professional development to make sure that they understand how they should be using that product. On the other hand, the control group is you know, continually encouraged to go about their regular practice, and we make sure that they don't have access to the new product or service. Interestingly enough, I keep coming back to this recent success story. It was so successful that one of our biggest challenges was keeping the control kids away from the technology in the school. They heard about it, and they all want to use it.
Yeah. But you were able to do that.
Yes, absolutely. What we had to do, this is often an ethical issue too, is we promised the teachers and students that didn't use it during the study that they would be able to use it for the same amount of time when the study was done.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I thought you were going to tell me that it's ethical. You give them all an ice cream cone if they don't use it or something like that.
right. Now, kids
bringing
a sharp
of ice cream.
They'll find their way. Yeah, they'll trust you if you say, well, you're going to have to wait, but you get to use it next.
Yeah, I have to ask the question, and then the reason I'm asking this question is because I want our educator audience to understand how important all this research is to the companies that produce the technology and curriculum that they're using. Okay, there's an investment by the company, or maybe perhaps sometimes by the school district, but usually by the company, by the manufacturer. Okay, an investment of dollars, okay? And I don't want to ask you for specifics, but what does let's just take an experimental study, okay? And let's just say it's a year long, like you said, it goes from October through May. How much does that cost?
Good question, Larry. I think the best way to look at that is it's really a range. Most of the studies fit within a range of about $40,000 to about $75,000. Certainly, some studies cost more and some cost less, but we find that the vast majority of the studies we conduct under the model we were talking about earlier are under $50,000. We certainly understand that schools and companies are challenged by resources, especially these days with the economy the way it's been. So we've worked very hard to get, you know, a good model in place where we can typically deliver a good research study for under $50,000.
That's pretty good. And I thought you were going to say a lot more. So that's really great on your part, Scott. And I'll give you this plug again, SEG Measurement in New Hope, Pennsylvania. You know, that allows us to these companies to get the right pricing on something that they need continually. And in these tough times, it's even more and more important. Let me ask you this, and we're just going to kind of wind up. The elections, as you know, were last week, and there was a Republican sweep into the Congress. And do you see any effect of politics coming down onto the research and assessment side of education? And this is not
it's speculative.
By the way.
Right. Everybody's busy speculating right now, but to the extent that I can do some educated speculation, I think there's more emphasis on research. You've seen over the past 2 years a growth in research in the Department of Education, or emphasis. In fact, many of the funding opportunities, everybody reads about the stimulus package, race to the top,
right.
I-3, all these words that are thrown around for various funding opportunities is almost to a T, they require that anything being funded be supported by scientifically based research or proof of product effectiveness. So that's certainly increased the interest in that area. It's really difficult to speculate what's going to happen. Is the leadership in the education area has not changed a lot, even with the large scale political changes we've just seen. So I think we'll see things proceed along a similar course, but that all remains to be seen. I think we're all living in, as the Chinese say, in interesting times.
They are interesting times indeed. But the electorate has spoken. It has considered what it wants. It has replaced many, many legislators, etc. I was just curious if there had been any chatter amongst you and your colleagues about what the results of that may be. So there we are.
I think really we've seen more uncertainty than anything else. I mean, I think everybody's anxious to see what's going to happen. I think everybody can accommodate, we'll have to accommodate change. The issue is, what will that change look like?
I'll segue as we end our little conversation here that there may be uncertainty there, but there is absolute certainty when Scott Elliott of SEG Measurement does your research, right? Scott, how was that for a segue?
I like that. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's for real. It's heartfelt. Would you like to sum up in any way before we say goodbye for today?
Well, I just think, looking at our conversation during the course of today, I think you can really see the value of effectiveness research from everything from the development of a product all the way through figuring out if a purchase is warranted. And, I encourage folks to consider it. I think it's really of great value, and it will be worth their while.
And I will give all your contact information as we're done. It is worth your while. Thank you, Scott. I hope I see you soon, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely. I hope so, too.
Okay. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, pal. Bye. And that was Scott Elliott, Dr. Scott Elliott. By the way, Elliott, I have to say, is with one T, E-L-L, excuse me, E-L-L-I-O-T. And Scott and I are always talking about this because my son's name is Elliot with two L's and two T's, so I invariably spell Scott Elliott's name wrong. So this is Dr. Scott Elliott, our guest today, who was our guest and is president of SEG Measurement, an educational assessment and research firm located in beautiful New Hope, Pennsylvania. You can reach Scott by email anytime at selliott, S-E-L-L-I-O-T, at SEGmeasurement, all one word, .com. And you can go to their website at SEG, www.SEGmeasurement.com. They're a good, fine company, and you can learn a lot by going over to their site, checking it out. If you're a teacher, you can see the kind of things that are offered to the educational publishers. And I always like to talk about that here because there's a whole industry supporting you of really good people, and they're trying their best to create good bottom lines for their companies, of course, but that only happens if they create good products for you. And let me tell you something, teachers, educators, administrators, they always want to hear from you, and all of them have websites. And if, like Scott today, I mean, if you want to get in touch with him or anyone in this industry, go to the website, look around. Believe me, they will answer. They're good people. And for the educational publishers out there, I hope you appreciate that because I honestly know many of you, so many of you, and know how much you depend on the teachers. And like Scott was saying, even the students' point of view. Parents, you too, you can get involved as well. Speaking of getting involved, I just want to say again that yesterday we interviewed Elizabeth Evans. Elizabeth is the founding CEO of the Viva Project. And that's at vivateachers.org. And the whole idea of it, which is very, very cool, is to get teachers involved in the public debate on educational reform. Okay? Now, tomorrow, on Thursday, November 11th, Armistice Day, the Veterans Day, they call it, I guess, now. Okay? Showing my age there. Tomorrow we're having on again with us at 11:30, at Eastern Time is Melanie Pritchett from Compass Learning, and we're going to talk about what to do as we wait for Superman. Educational reform in the age of waiting for Superman. And I want to ask her some of her comments about the movie, about educational reform, and also we're going to talk, and Scott touched on this today, our guest today, Scott Elliott touched on professional development. Compass Learning has this really cool program, and it's called Impact Academies. And I want to talk to Melanie, who is the Director of Educational Policy tomorrow, about how their professional developed these, literally these Impact Academies, which I think is a very cool name. I want to know how they work and what they are and how they work for Compass Learning's professional development. So we'll do that tomorrow at 11:30 EST, but everything is archived, and it's archived at our radio blog, which is www.educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. We're also going to have them archived soon, not quite yet, but soon on edweb.net, www.edweb.net, which is that large online social community for educational leaders, teachers, administrators, librarians, actually anyone, www.edweb.net. Check it out. And you can always listen live if you're doing that right now, blogtalkradio.com/edutalk, E-D-U-T-A-L-K. This is Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening today. Thank you, Scott Elliott. As always, you're a wonderful guest. We'll have you on again. And I look forward to talking to all of you again tomorrow and whatever the case may be here on Education Talk Radio. Have a great day.